W226 BZ Macon, W290 BD Montezuma, WWKM FM Rochelle, WCEH FM Pinehurst, WCEH AM Hawkinsville, WXKO AM Fort Valley, WFXM FM HD4 Gordon.
Braves, Bulldogs, Falcons, Yellow Jackets, Hawks, Eagles. From the heart of Georgia, it's the Bill Shank Show.
Hour number three of our show. Welcome back. I'm Bill Shanks with Russ Brown. We are live here on location before tonight's game between the Bravos and the Rockies at SunTrust Park. We're right down the street from SunTrust Park at Cobb Galleria with Merce Restaurant. And we invite you to come when you're coming to a Braves game, or if you're ever in North Atlanta, to come get some great food. You know, me and Russ wouldn't be here if it wasn't good, that's for sure. And they've got great burgers, great cheese curds. Oh, my gosh, they were so good. We had some cheese curds, kind of had to have a little appetizer, and we may get a burger before we get out of here to go to the game. Dale Murphy is with us and is always thrilled. I want to ask you, Murph, we were on the air when you walked in and got we thought they were cheering for us, and all of a sudden we looked up and you were walking in. That had to be pretty cool to get that applause.
Oh, thank you. Thank you guys for being here again. Yeah, it's like Norm with cheers, you know. it always feels good to have someone know your name.
Yes, yeah. It does.
But you know, I've had so much fun here and so thankful for what I call on Twitter Team Murphs. We got a great team here. I get a lot of compliments on our servers. They're really good. You know, it's just this is a you got to work hard in a restaurant.
Oh, yes.
And I show up every once in a while, you know, and shake hands and take pictures, and I love it. But I'm really thankful for all those who are putting in a lot of hard work, and we're very proud of Merce.
I know it's extra special for people when you're here to be able to see you, obviously. But even when you're not, to be able to come here, and Chuck said we can now talk about the fact that people can come here and park for $5. Yeah, we kind of let that out of the bag.
That's right.
It's
a good place to park if you're going to a Braves game.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? I can't imagine any Braves fan not wanting to come here to see everything in here, whether Dale Murphy's here or not. I mean, this environment is so Braves fan-friendly that well, who wouldn't want to see this stuff?
It's fun. And Chuck has added some stuff here, and I've put some things here, and we still got more things to add. But also, I have no announcement to make, but we got some stuff we want to put in our next one. So
for sure, absolutely.
So, but I just, in case people don't know, I'm very thankful to Braves that gave me the three that when I was retired that they hung in Turner Field. So
that's so cool.
That's kind of our focal point of the restaurant. A lot of fun. So yeah, thank you, Bill. It's just fun. You know, we want to put some things up here that people remember, and those were fun days. They were different days. So it's fun to come here and relive those memories.
I want for us to do something. I know you and I have talked about this, like something for the Hot Stove League, but I would love to get like a couple of your old teammates to come and do that. That'd be a lot of fun.
No, I would too. And, you know, people usually ask me, you know, about somebody that I used to play with, but they always ask me about Bob Horner.
Oh, yes. Yes.
and I saw Bob a couple times last year, and it would be fun. It's just an interesting era, you know, of the game and that lineup. It's so interesting that, you know, we had a couple good years.
Sure.
But people can name that lineup.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
We weren't in the World Series every year, but it's all about the exposure we had. We were on so much, and it was a fun time.
People my age, though, that grew up in that TBS era.
The TBS era,
That was before 1991. And, you know, I look at that lineup over there from April 4th, 1983. And you know what, Murph? That's my team.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That no matter how old I get, that group of nine people, particularly with the pitcher there, number nine, Phil Niekro.
Nuxie, yeah.
That right there is my team. Every one of those people, it's like when I think of Braves baseball, those are my nine. And that's why it's really, and no offense to Hank Aaron or Rico any of those guys in the 70s,
exactly.
But that's when you guys got on the map.
Yeah.
And that's why I think for people my age and maybe a tad younger, that's what's so important about those memories, because it was a fun team and y'all were good.
Yeah, we had, you know, as you know, we had a couple good years. It was never, I tell people, we weren't always that good, but we weren't boring. Something was happening. Of course, Ted was so involved.
Yes.
And those were kind of early days for Ted. But, you know, kind of just, it's not really changing subjects. But I think one of the things, though, that era proved is that baseball just needs more exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Need to be able to see the game. You know, it was just on every night. It was easily accessible. I know there's challenges now and there's more money involved. I'll just say this, that I get on Twitter a lot. You probably see this too.
Yes.
And have a lot of questions. It's the blackout rule.
Mm-hmm.
If there's something baseball can learn from back then, is that exposure is good.
Absolutely.
And even on any device, any TV, it really will draw people to the ballpark eventually.
Sure.
Because people told Ted Turner, you know, you can't put them on every night. People won't want to come to the stadium. But if the team's good, they'll watch you on TV and then want to come see you.
Absolutely.
At the stadium because they'll be a part of it.
Sure.
And so it was a really interesting time. And I know things are completely different now, obviously, financially and the way all the things structured. But we had a lot of exposure, and even in this region, in the Southeast, we were on every night.
You're right, but you're exactly right, because I, as a kid in Waycross, Georgia, at least once a year would beg for a trip to Atlanta, because I was watching them on TV every night. And it's easy, even 4 hours away, to say, well, we can watch them on TV tonight, why do we need to go? But especially in 82, 83, 84, you wanted to be there and so forth. Hey, speaking of that, do you ever talk to Joe Torre?
Well, yeah, I see Joe at events every once in a while. I'll text him every once in a while. You know, I had my best years under Joe.
Yes.
And so
very instrumental in your MVP years, wasn't
absolutely
he?
No question about it. And Joe is, you know, I've always considered him so impactful on my career, him and Bobby, obviously. And very thankful for the chance that our paths crossed with Joe.
I know that a lot of Braves fans, younger Braves fans, equate Joe Torre with the ruling of the outfield fly rule a couple of years ago in the Cardinals game. But you know what? I have always said, like I have with Bob Horner too, which we've talked about in the past, that Joe Torre belongs to the Braves Hall of Fame. He was the first catcher.
You're exactly right.
And then he was the first catcher for the Atlanta Braves. They came to Milwaukee. From Milwaukee. He had very good years. And then he had 3 years as the manager. And he's a part of this history. I wish he could be more a part of the history. I know he's so attached to the Yankees, but think about Mets, Cardinals, and Braves. That's where he came up with. That's who he played with. And he played with how unusual it is for someone to play and manage the three teams that he played with, which is what Joe did. He managed the Mets, Cardinals, and Braves. Those are the three teams he played with. That doesn't happen very often. I know he's in the Cardinals Hall of Fame, and I wish – we could get past that outfield fly rule thing and bring him back, because and that just to embrace that 82 team. And of course, that's me talking as a 12-year-old who, of course, had that team. Hey, I want to talk about some modern day stuff. Has Snick called you to pitch in the bullpen? Are you a candidate for the bullpen right now?
I'll tell you, you know, as you know, all of baseball's going through a little challenge with the bullpen.
They are.
And it's a long discussion, and I have it on Twitter occasionally, but you know, the days of complete games are over, and so it just puts extra pressure on the size of the bullpen. We had 10 in 82, the size of our pitching staff.
Right.
It's 13 now because of the theory of they're not going to go through the lineup necessarily three times. Anyway, so we got to start bringing guys in from the bullpen. I've maintained that, and I guess what we're seeing is the Braves aren't the only team challenged with running people out there every night in the bullpen. It's just a different part of the game, so it's a very challenging situation. But there's OPS. What did I just read? An article that this is the first time in history. It's early in the season, but the OPS is that on base plus slugging.
Correct. Yes,
is higher in the bullpen than it is for starting pitchers.
Really?
For the first time in history. I think Joel Sherman wrote the article.
Wow. I saw that article.
So the point is what...
Oh, you retweeted that article the other day. Yes.
So what's going on? This is not just a Braves thing.
No.
This is the trend that's been going on. We're going to rely on our middle relief, and you just can't run people out there every night And then if they go on the DL or get a little tired, bring a guy from AAA. Just because he throws 95 doesn't mean he knows how to pitch. Doesn't mean he has command. But it's not. It's a situation in baseball that's really interesting. I just maintain that clubs are the first club that figures out. I think we talked about this last time on the show.
Yeah.
You know, it's a challenge in baseball. The starter's got to lengthen things out a little bit.
I wrote an article the other day for the Athens Banner-Herald, and I asked some questions. I've said, first of all, we have been told, the industry has told us, starting pitchers should not throw more than 100 pitches a game for whatever reason, and starting pitchers should not face a lineup for a third time.
Yeah.
If that's a big if now, if that is correct, then what should be the most valuable part of your pitching staff? Middle relief. And it's and you know, Murph, and you know this even from your days, a lot of times middle relievers were looked at as interchangeable. Oh, we'll use him and throw him away and bring up some money from AAA. Yeah. You can't do that anymore.
No.
If that is true about starting pitchers can't go into the seventh inning, you cannot use them that much, and you're going to rotate your guys, why not invest in that middle relief? That's one thing we talk about on the show all the time on a regular basis, especially when they struggle.
No
question.
It's
like, well, you didn't invest in your middle relief, so don't complain about what's happening to you right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with everything you said. There's just that's pretty plain and simple.
Let me ask you this: will we see to combat that one of two things? Closers being used earlier, or in a situation like the Braves, obviously, where they have a lot of starting pitching depth, including pitchers in AAA, some form of, for lack of a better term, piggybacking. Could somebody do that and cross that threshold? Because you said the first team that learns that you don't have to shut them off at 100 pitches is probably going to be a team that really succeeds with their pitching staff, right?
You said that. So here's how you do it. You just start the trend in rookie ball.
Yeah.
You know, because what's happening is they stop them at 80 in A ball. You know, so let's go in rookie league 75. A ball is going to be 80. The other thing is spend some time in the minor leagues. Okay, getting yourself ready to go through a lineup three times, which may be 120, 130 pitches, but you've built up to it. The other thing is you have to learn how to go through a lineup three times.
Right.
I don't think they're asking the pitchers to do it, so the young pitchers are just blowing as hard as they can for five innings. Because that's what they've been asked to do, or 100 pitches. You could be in the seventh inning at 85 pitches if you've developed command and you've figured out that I got to get this leadoff hitter and the second and these other guys, I got to get them out three times.
Right.
How am I going to do that?
Right.
Well, that may mean you go to your changeup earlier in the game, right off the bat.
And don't show them another pitch.
You don't, you know, throw them slide or change.
Right.
I mean, it's easier said than done. My point is, Ted Simmons, I remember he took Zane Smith under his wing and had a run of about six or seven games that were just incredible. But Zane had guys coming up the third at bat that hadn't seen a fastball yet. You know, he threw him sliders, changes.
Right.
Fastballs maybe off the plate to set him up to get him out with a changeup.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a thing that they can learn, in fact, this generation now is so geared up to the fastball. A guy like Rick Mailer or Zane Smith, I think they're going to come back. Mm-hmm. The guys with control and off speed, because now since the trend is thrown hard, you got to buck the trend,
right,
and get ahead of the curve. And I think so. My only cure I can think of, Bill, is extending these pitchers to where they are ready to go seven, and they figured out how to do it when they're in AAA. That's what they're geared for.
They're not conditioned now, though.
Yeah, that's
they?
What I that's what
right,
I mean. If
right.
you're just not conditioned to do right. it. And I know what they're doing. They're protecting their arms from the youth travel leagues. But I still think these guys are good enough athletes with good enough training and good enough coaching. It's not that you have to throw 130 pitches every time you go out. Figure out how to throw control, get guys out without striking them out, what their weaknesses are. Do like Maddux really did.
Right.
Study.
I was going to bring him up because Maddux said all the time, I may not show someone in the first at bat what I'm going to do to him in the third at bat.
That's exactly right.
But
if you're not even planning to pitch to him the third time, why even think about it?
Right.
You're exactly right.
Right.
So I'm not saying we got to go back to the complete game era. You know, I was with left-hander with the Yankees in the 80s. Louisiana.
Ron Guidry.
Ron Guidry. A couple weeks ago, I said, Ron, what's your career season high for complete games? I know it's crazy. He said, I threw 23 one year. I'm not saying we go back to that. That's not even an important stat to me, but we got to go a little longer because what we're seeing is we can't run bullpens out there every day.
Right.
We're going to burn guys out. And the hitters have adjusted, Bill. They've adjusted to this. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, people say, what's the biggest difference now? I go, it's harder to hit now because you're facing 4 and 5 guys a night. Well, now these guys have caught up. They know what to expect. They're going to face the starter twice, and then they're going to face a guy that they've faced already quite a bit because he's a middle reliever.
Yeah.
See what I mean? So it's going to take some thinking, but every club is in this, Bill. It's right. A baseball.
Oh, yeah.
It's a baseball
it's
thing.
It's an industry issue. It's not a Braves issue. It's not – because I remember about 10 years ago I was talking with someone – And it was someone in the front office, and they were really describing relievers as throwaways, and that almost I've heard that too.
Yeah,
you know, a percentage of your pitchers are people that if you burn them out in June, who cares?
We got another guy that's throwing 95 in AAA. Bring him up.
Well, bring him up, and he'll be cheaper.
And he's cheaper, but he doesn't have command.
Right. No.
And he gets behind, and he throws his 95-mile-an-hour fastball, and anybody can hit a 95-mile-an-hour fastball 2-0.
Right.
So you're right. It's going to require some rethinking.
But you know what a lot of people were thinking, and you probably saw this on Twitter when the bullpen really started for Atlanta having some troubles a couple of weeks ago, is the question of should the Braves have invested $23 million in a position player where they already had a position player there in Johan Camargo? What if they had spent that half of that $23 million on three decent middle relievers? I'm not talking about Craig Kimbrell. I'm talking
about, I know what you're saying.
You know, three guys who could have been middle relievers that would have taken the stress off of Biscaino and Johnny Venters, and if he ever shows up, Darren O'Day, and of course AJ Minter.
You're right.
To where it's not such a throwaway thing.
Well, it's a good. And I love Josh Donaldson too, and he's doing well.
Sure.
But to your point, baseball will always be about what. Pitching.
Yeah, it will.
there's no question about it.
Yeah.
That the team with the best pitching and defense, but very seldom does the team with the absolute best offense win. Everybody knows this. Defense is great. It improves your pitching, but pitching, it's always going to be about pitching. I want to say one more thing about analytics and looking at guys at a cutoff thing. Soroka was pitching the other night. I think Brian Bmack was catching him.
Yeah.
And you probably saw that. Snit came out, what's going on? And BMAC's like, we're right where we need to be. Do not take him out.
Yes.
So there's the challenge with analytics is no matter how good a guy's pitching, if he's at 98 pitches, he's done. And it's not necessarily that cut and dried.
No.
He may be pitching well enough to get an inning or two still. But you can't make a decision. And I think this is, I'm not saying Snit's doing this all the time, but he's conditioned, and all of the managers are, how many pitches has he thrown?
That's right.
He's at 90. Okay, we're going to watch him get somebody up in the bullpen. It's just what they're doing. And sometimes
they don't even let him finish. It's like if you let him finish an inning, that's one less relief pitcher you'll have to use.
That's the whole thing. You don't have to get somebody up that night.
Right.
I might say, as Smoltz told me this, Smoltz told me about Brian McCann. Same thing happened in the World Series when Brian was with
Houston.
Charlie Morton was pitching.
Okay.
Smoltz told me that Brian McCann came in and told the manager for Houston.
AJ. Yeah.
Whatever you do, do not take Charlie Morton out of this game.
Really?
Don't. He's, and I can't remember what the situation or even the game. The point of it was, the downside of analytics is that sometimes it's taken as absolutely what's going to happen,
right?
And because the analytics say it, it just isn't always true. And Brian McCann, that's just something to remember. I guess is it's not automatically even now 100 pitches.
No.
If the guy's thrown,
you can't quantify the human element.
Exactly.
And there is nothing that I have ever read that has said, limiting the pitch counts for starting pitchers has shown a dramatic decrease in Tommy John surgeries. Well,
aren't we having more now?
Yes.
And I think I read a headline, didn't I read the article, that they're predicting more and it's coming, another wave is coming. Maybe it's the youth travel leagues. We got to get pitch counts everywhere for these kids when they're younger. You know what I mean?
Have you heard of the driveline? Have you heard of that? You haven't.
No,
right?
I haven't.
And I'm not trying to stump you, by the way.
We're here with
Del Murphy. I didn't know about it until Snit actually told me in spring training. We were talking about one of the Braves pitchers, and he said, oh, yeah, he went to the driveline. I'm like, what are you talking about, driveline? And I love pitching. He thought, you haven't heard of driveline? And evidently, driveline is like this academy that a lot of pitchers are going to learn how to use their analytics and to really break down their mechanics on the computer to try to throw harder.
Well, yeah.
And Luke Jackson did it. Luke Jackson did it. I can't remember. There's a couple other pitchers that did it for the Braves. But it's all about that velocity, because that's what's in their mind of how they're going to get here. And
that's
how
it is either going to get them drafted or a scholarship is how hard they throw.
Right,
and
right.
It's just.
But that it was interesting to learn about that. You want to Google it when you have time.
Okay.
And one of the things that they do is different kind of exercises. And when he was telling me about this, then I was looking up online, one of the things they do is weighted balls, and they throw close to a wall this weighted ball that bounces right back to them. Yes. And I saw Kyle Wright, he must have gone there, do it in Tampa at the Yankees spring training complex when they were playing the Yankees. I'm like, what is he doing? But it was a weighted ball, and you read that's part of their philosophy of arm strength and having a weighted ball. We've gone from long toss to now weighted balls, but it was close up. I mean, it was like 3 feet in front of their face. But that's
throwing
As
I mentioned earlier, I was with Ron Guidry. I was also with Goose Gossage.
Oh, now, Lord.
Goose is being very outspoken.
Yes, he is.
But I go, what's going on, guys? And they said they both said, I'll tell you what I'd do if I was managing the Yankees right now. None of those pitchers would go in the weight room.
Mm.
They said they're leaving it in the gym. He said, you ought to see these guys work out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everything takes a toll. I know you got to be in shape. But when the action, I know, of throwing a baseball as hard as you can literally tears up your shoulder and your elbow every time you do it. That's why they ice down.
Right.
But they're throwing a lot as kids. They are working extra hard on things. It's not that we didn't work hard back then, but I thought it was interesting that Goose and Ron Guidry said, I'd kick them out of the gym. They're leaving it in the gym.
Yeah.
And so maybe there's a little bit too much overwork. There's something going on. If there's this many Tommy Johns, that's just a sign of overwork.
Well, and Goose Gossage has to feel really funny about some of these relievers, because Goose Gossage used to go 2 1/3, 2 2/3.
Yeah.
That's how I'll tell you this quick story, Murph. I've said this on the air before. 15 years ago, right, it was the year before Warren Spahn died. There was a Braves Hall of Fame ceremony. And so I said, I've got to try to interview Warren Spahn. I mean, he pitched before I was born, but it's Warren Spahn, you know? And so, bless his heart. I mean, it was like the year before he died. He could barely see. He had cataracts on his eyes, and he couldn't really hear very well. But I asked him the question of what he thought about the lower number of complete games. I can't repeat what Mr. Spahn said. You can only imagine.
Yeah.
But you know, those old pitchers even now who are still alive, and even in Guidry and Gooses, I mean, they probably – it's almost like the dumbing down of pitching in a way.
Pitching is the hardest thing to do in baseball. You got to throw strikes. You got to know each hitter. You got to know each situation. You got to remember. Greg Maddux had recall of every pitch right after the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, people say, "Well, man, he was really gifted. He had a good memory." No, he worked at it. You know, you have to think. You have to. That's so much mental. And so when you just ask guys to go 100 pitchers or 5 innings, whichever comes first, there is not as much thinking involved. And so I'm not saying pitchers of yesterday were smarter. They were asked to do more, so they stepped up.
Right.
You know, if you in your minor leagues all of a sudden say, look, before you come to the big leagues, you got to have this many innings or this many seven-inning games.
Right.
We're not just going to go by you can blow for 5 innings. You just got to change your organization. And I think, like you say, these guys are not interchangeable. They have to really learn. These guys are good hitters. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, one last thing, young pitchers, always remember, when you throw a ball over the plate, you have a 70% chance of getting the guy out.
There's that.
70% chance. Okay, maybe in high school it goes down to 60.
Yes.
But it's the best pitchers I faced didn't walk people.
Right.
They let you hit it. They gave you at least one pitch to hit, and at bat, if you missed it, you're probably not going to get another one. Mm-hmm. At least. And so that's how they became successful. I think it was Maddux again himself said, I learned how to be a good pitcher when I stopped trying to strike everybody out. Mm-hmm. I got to let them hit it.
Pitch to contact.
So
I've heard Bruce Del Canton, God bless him,
yeah,
on the minor league fields talk about that. He said, if you pitch to contact, guess what's going to happen? Your pitch count's going to be lower. You're going to be able to stay in the game longer.
Yeah.
It's not difficult.
It's 70% chance. Now, I could never throw a strike if I was out there. I'm not saying it's easy. Oh, that would have been fun to watch me pitch.
Yeah, but you were good from the catcher's thing going to center field. You were the best I've ever seen.
Hubby used to say, Murph's got it. Look out.
Over my head.
Oh, well, yeah.
Hey, it's you know what? And I want to tell you, it is great that you, as a member of the generation from the 80s and the 90s, the 70s, 80s, and 90s, are outspoken about the game today, because I think that's very important for everybody in your era to do that on Twitter or on my show or nationally or whatever, to talk more. And not that we're trying to change it back to what it was. But I think the discussion's already going on, right?
Yeah,
I mean they started.
It's a baseball thing. It's
right.
Not a Braves thing. You're
absolutely
right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it's always good for you to get on Twitter
and do that.
And even when you retweet, because I started to read that Sherman article the other day, because he's real good about a lot of things too.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed a lot of his material as well. So hey, we'll let you go to get
back to
some of your friends. We always love talking baseball with you. Thank you so much for having us and for stopping by.
Yeah, well, have fun. You know, it's going to be a big crowd tonight.
Big crowd.
It'll be a lot of fun.
I tell you, Max Fried's pitching. Ronald Acuna's hit. Pretty good combo. You like him?
How about that curveball?
Hey, it looks pretty good, doesn't it?
No, it's, you know, you always kind of, being a right-handed hitter, you know, when I was a left-handed hitter, I'd be like, okay, you know, I'm pretty comfortable, but man, I don't know if I'd be that comfortable against him.
He's good.
Have fun.
No
Thanks,
doubt.
Bill.
Thank you very much. Dale Murphy being with us here at his restaurant, Merce, right down the street from SunTrust Park. Come get a burger. Anytime you're coming to SunTrust Park to watch the Bravos. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and get back a little bit to the draft. Talk more about it. If you want to join in and give us your thoughts on what happened last night with the Falcons or any other team for the NFL draft, you can, or what will happen tonight when it starts at 7 o'clock for the second and third rounds. You can join us, 478-646-ESPN. We'll take a break back with more from Merce right after this. Thank you very much for being with us here on this Friday. We're at Merce Restaurant here in Atlanta, getting ready for the Braves and the Rockies tonight. Game one of a three-game set. Braves will be wearing red. And Ronald Acuna bobblehead night. Pretty big night for the Bravos. Max Fried pitching and Ronald Acuna hitting. I like that combination, don't you? Pretty good.
Yeah. That's not a bad combination at all. And hopefully Max has about 7 or 8 innings with him, you know, after hearing that conversation especially.
You know, are we already there where Max Fried, after even 4 starts this year and 12 career starts, has kind of turned the corner now to where he's in? You feel that?
Yeah.
And even not only with us, but almost nationally as well. Can you feel that too?
Oh, there's no question. I think for Max, it's just a matter of health. I mean, because it's the combination of the fastball and the curveball. And I think that the last start, when the home plate umpire wasn't really giving him the high strike on the fastball, he was still able to go out and have a good performance. And I think that's what sold me more than anything else. Because, I mean, if he's getting the high strike, And then all of a sudden he goes from 95 to dropping that curveball on you and the breaking point's coming. I mean, the eye level's the same for a hitter, and then that thing just dives into the ground. It's unhittable. I mean, and so I think everybody always knew the combination of those two pitches. And those are not that those are his only two, but I think those are his best two. you knew this guy had a chance to really be special. And it's good to see him put it together, and I hope he can keep it going. No blisters, no nothing like that. Let's just have an entire season like this. And I think when it's all said and done, we'll all feel like this is the best pitcher on the Braves staff.
I agree. And I obviously have always been a fan of his. I mean, how can you not be a fan of that curveball? It doesn't take a whole lot. Plus, you know, when you see a left-hander being able to pitch in the mid-90s, and then to add in the curveball, and the hope that I had, as he's done, that he would develop those other pitches as well, it's even more. But you got to be smart. Murphy was just talking about that a little bit as far as Greg Maddux. Not that everybody's going to be Greg Maddux, because I do believe Greg Maddux is a savant. And I'm not being mean. I think Greg Maddux is on another level mentally that we can't even. And Murph just said, you know, Greg knows all of his pitches. He could tell you, he used to be able to tell you, and I've heard him in a post-game press conference, hey, you threw a 3-2 pitch to Ryan Howard in the fourth inning. What did you do? He'll know. Just like, you know how golfers are when they're on the course. Tiger did it. Heck, he talked after he won that final round. He went through every daggum club he used the whole daggum day. Those kind of people know that to a certain extent, are able to kind of really – they're savant line in their lane. That's how they are. And I'm not comparing Max Fried to Greg Maddux. Don't think that I am. But the intelligence that it takes to pitch in the big leagues, to utilize your stuff and to be smart on the mound and to be able to sustain that for a long period of time and not just go up there and chunk it. We were just kind of talking about that a little bit with Murph about how the fastball is so big. And I think a lot of kids do believe the faster I throw it and the more I chunk it, I might get hurt one day, but I'm going to get the big leagues and get people out until I do get hurt. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. You have to be smart, and especially if you do have those kind of pitches. My word, go ahead I don't know if you noticed the other night on Sunday when Max gave up the home run to Lindor. I don't know if you saw that, but he was really mad at himself, and I think you can say easily, well, he made a mistake. But you can almost see him churning where he was wanting to give credit to Lindor, but he was really mad at himself. Mm-hmm. And he had a big lead, Russ. No worry about them coming back because the bullpen hadn't come back in yet. But he was mad because he lost his shutout. And that to me showed me another part of Max Fried that I think is going to make him as good as we think he can be.
Well, he's competitive, right? And it's every at bat for him. And I think, you know, time will tell. But I also think that's a sign that a pitcher's able to just kind of block everything else out. And you hear the guys all the time use the term execute their pitches. But I think he's really able to block everything out and just really focus on the next batter, the next pitch. And it wasn't not that he's not a excuse me. Now that he's not aware of what's going on in the game, of course he is. But in that moment, it's just like, you got me that time. I'll get you next time.
Right.
You
know. Exactly.
And you could really see that. And I think that's just kind of a special trait. And also, you know what? And also feel bad for guys that don't have that, because I don't think you can teach that. I really don't. I think it's just part of the makeup of this kid that, you know, you got to have the combination of the stuff, which we know he has. But you got to have that edge about you, too. I mean, we've seen pitchers with edges without stuff, pitchers with stuff without edges. He's got both.
He does. You can have stuff and even moxie, but if you're stupid, you're going to get hit. You know why? Because you're going to make bad pitches.
Right.
And you can't do that. I mean, it's just not. Look, and God bless him, he's dead now, but Jose Capion, stuff-wise, he could throw a plus fastball and a plus breaking ball. He really should have been in the bullpen. And I don't know what happened to Jose, but I want to tell you, and with all due respect to someone who's dead, he was dumb as a box of rocks. The poor kid, he just didn't have it upstairs. And if he'd had a little bit more intelligence about how to utilize his pitches, I'm not saying he wouldn't have been dead, but I mean, he would have pitched the big leagues long. I don't know if you remember when he got called up, it was like the second coming was coming up here as a prospect in like 2004 or 5. It was a big deal on a Sunday afternoon against Milwaukee, the team he was eventually traded to. But the poor kid, he had nothing upstairs. And it's like, you can't get by with that these days. You just can't. And you know what? I think fans can sometimes, Russ, see that on the mound. And I'm not saying I'm the smartest human being alive watching baseball, But sometimes I can see when a pitcher's being pretty damn stupid.
Yeah. Well, I think they're caught up in the moment. You know, it's easy to see from the outside. You know, because you're not on the mound. You're not in the middle of
Certainly.
It. Certainly. I think we saw that a little bit with Jesse Biddle this year. It's not that he doesn't have the stuff. It's not that he's not smart enough. It's just frustration starts to take over, and it's like, dude, what are you doing? And he can't. And it's like. We always joke about staying within yourself. It's like he can't step outside of himself for a second to take a deep breath and kind of recalculate. And hopefully he'll get that done pretty soon, though.
And I know we've talked about this a little bit, but Erica Flaherty, you want to watch a good follow for Twitter to talk about pitching? It's Erica Flaherty, the former Braves pitcher. And he's talked a lot even I was just looking at one of his tweets here. And he was writing about relievers, but he said it rarely ends up being middle when you are struggling to locate pitches in the first place. It's not plan A, B, or C, but it's better than walks. McCann calls the one with no location and straddles the plate for his whole AB. He and David Ross did this all the time to get Craig Kimbrell in the zone. I mean, it's little things like that you think about of how pitching is so important. And because, look, Dale Murphy knows more than anyone, if his teams back in the early 80s had good pitching, he'd have a couple of World Series rings on his finger when he walks around shaking your hand. He didn't have squat except for number 35, Philip Henry Negro. That's all he had. He had nothing. And that's why they didn't win more than they did. One, because he wasn't hitting. Of course, I'd love to find the news articles about, we were talking about Horner and Guidry. I remember there was a great rumor in 1982, Russ, should the Braves trade Bob Horner for Ron Guidry. Oh, my gosh. I love Horner, but that would have been pretty cool, too. Ron Guidry and Phil Negro in your weekend series against the Dodgers, and Guidry would have come home to pitch in the South as he was from. He was called Louisiana Lightning. He had a year. I don't know if it's the year Murph was talking about, but one year Guidry was 25-3. Can you imagine? And I think that was the year he had like 38 starts, probably 300-some-odd innings. And 28 decisions, though.
Yeah, you won't ever see numbers like that.
That's hard to even see. Yeah.
And Murph, talking about, what was it? What did he say? 23 complete games in a season. I mean, you might not see that in a career ever again.
No, might not see that in a season.
Do you remember last year the Friday night game we're at when Folty threw the complete game?
Yes.
I mean, that felt like a no hitter because it's so rare now.
Right. What was the thing we heard about? It was Sandy Koufax said, how do you judge a successful start? And he said, greeting the catcher at the end of the game on the mound. That was their mindset, you know. Let's see, complete games. Yeah, Ron Guidry had 95 in his whole career. 368 starts, 95 complete games. So do that percentage, one of about every three. Pretty good. We're going to take a break, come back. We are at Merce, talking sports. If you'd like to join us, you can. We're getting ready for the Braves and the Rockies. We may get a little burger coming up here soon. I got some good food over there. Look at that food. That looks good. We'll take a break, back with more from Merce here in Atlanta right after this. Bill and Russ back here at Merce Restaurant in Atlanta. Don't forget, too, if you want to go online, DaleMurphy.com has more information about Murph. And also, if you have any speaking engagement that you would like for Murph to come and to be a part of, he can do that. He speaks a lot of events, and he is a very sought-after speaker. And we encourage you to do that. I know we heard him. I mean, we've known him, obviously, for a while, but we heard him. He was at Mercer a few years ago for their baseball start season event, and he does a great job. And any type of event you may have that you may like for Dale Murphy, I mean, you know, hey, that's pretty impressive. Who's going to be speaking? Dale Murphy. I'm there. So we encourage you to, and I want to tell you, he's just as nice as you can only imagine. It ain't fake. He's the real deal. He's as nice as he can be, and it is something to see. People, we laughed with him and joked with him about when he came in, how he got a rousing applause. But it's also so fun to see when he's here, the and Chuck said this earlier, the manager here and part owner, is the look on his face when he's able to talk with the people, and he just enjoys it so much, and he's the real deal. He's a great guy, great to have us here at his restaurant and to always talk to. And he knows what's going on in the game, and he's not afraid to say things, which is always a pleasure to have someone outspoken. And because, you know, a lot of times, Russ, I think new age baseball people don't want to hear it.
No, they don't. And it probably really hurts to hear it from a former player, right? You're going to tell Dale Murphy doesn't know what he's talking about? I mean, come on, right? But it's the genuineness, man. You just, in this day and age, you don't see it a lot, you know? You just don't. And, you know, people are really concerned about their perception and saying the right thing and doing the right thing and looking a certain way. And Dale doesn't really seem to worry about that too much. And he's not doing it in a contentious way either. It's just, you know, here's what I think, for whatever that's worth, and these are my thoughts on the game. And the genuine human being that he is and the love for the game, I mean, it's real, and you can see it when you sit down and talk to him.
Yeah, he really is. He's great to talk with, and it's always just refreshing, and you know, he's Dale Murphy. I mean, what do we really need to say? I was looking at some of the on Twitter for some of the things that Brian Snicker may have said in his press conference today. Brian Snicker said that Johnny Venters will make another rehab appearance before being activated, and I think that's a good sign. I know Venters pitched, what, night before last, and it was good to see that he is coming back, so that's good. I hope he can be effective. That's the one thing. I hope he can be effective when he comes back, because he really, really struggled, and so we have to kind of worry about that, but he, as long as he's healthy, he's going to have a shot. We know that elbow is kind of hanging on by a thread, but it's someone who they really desperately need in that bullpen to be able to come back. And I go back to, I said when he left, Russ, the lefty on lefty pitcher out there is on the injured list with Johnny. Biddle has reverse split, so he's not effective against left-handed batters, and you really don't have anyone except for AJ, who's the closer, so that means he can't be situational. You always have to hope he comes up. And I want to bring that up again. I mentioned this to Murph. Remember a couple of years ago when the Cubs and Indians were in the World Series, and we saw the Indians in particular use their closer early in the game. When are we going to see that? When are we going to see, okay, you know what? It's 4-3. I got the best part of the Rockies order coming up at the seventh inning. Oh, why don't I get AJ Minter up? Is that going to be looked at as crazy?
No, I don't think it is. And in fact, I wonder if there were three, maybe four guys that you really felt comfortable with out there, especially until Venters comes back, and you know he's going to be effective against a particular team, not just anybody. But if there's a particular team that has a lot of lefties in the lineup and they're kind of stacked up in the same part of the order, if that were to roll around in the seventh or eighth inning, I feel like if Snit had somebody besides Minter that he would be willing to throw out there in the ninth inning, you might see Minter come in that situation to get you through that part of the order. I don't think there's any doubt you're going to see that. And we may even get to a day where teams just match up lefty-righty all the way to the end of the ball game, and you don't really see as many saves because, you know, it may be a quote-unquote save situation. Guy goes out there, faces two right-handed batters, gets them out, lefty comes to the plate, here comes the manager, brings in the lefty, game over. So I don't think we're far away from seeing something like that.
Because what we were talking about with Murph was basically some things that are kind of off the rail a little bit compared to what's being done and what's almost expected to be done. And you really wonder when some things are going to be attempted. Because I think, all right, let's just say, for example, you've got a lineup that is predominantly left-handed, and you know sitting there in the sixth inning that there's a very good chance that you're going to see those left-handed hitters in the seventh inning. Well, if you wait to use your closer in the ninth inning and those guys are not up at that point in time, it may be an easy save opportunity, but are you going to have the – now, if you have the pitchers to get them out in the seventh inning, it doesn't matter. You know, if you know your middle relief is strong, but what if you know, like Atlanta, that your middle relief's not very good? When is the thought of, well, I'm going to bring my closer in the eighth inning, and if he holds them, maybe I get an insurance run at the top of the ninth, and I can go back out there and have a two-run lead instead of a one-run lead. There's different ways to skin a cat, really, but the one thing that analytics and Moneyball and all that stuff is doing is allowing us to really take baseball to a new level, a new conversation. I remember when I was a kid and I had a TV show one time with a very good friend of mine at the time, Dennis Abercrombie was his name. He was a huge Red Sox fan, Russ. He was about 10, 15 years older than I was, but he loved baseball, and we would talk all the time. And he was the one that got me into rotisserie baseball for the first time. I got out of it after that because I was spending more time about rotisserie baseball than I was my college work. But, oh, my gosh. You know what we argued about? Platoons. That was it.
No.
That was the extent of it.
Wow.
Platoons.
Well, yeah, and Murph mentioned a 10-man pitching staff. See, I've always felt like if everybody's going to do it this way, eventually somebody's going to come along. And with the novel concept that if you're going to be so specialized in your bullpen, I'm going to have seven guys on the bench, and I'm going to have pitchers that can go into the seventh or eighth inning and throw 130, 140 pitches, and when you try to match up, I'm just going to blow it out of the water. I think eventually that's going to happen, where it's just going to revert back. Because, I mean, the one thing you go back to is there's different eras of baseball throughout the years. There's no question about that, and there's no question this is an analytics era. But it's not like anybody's doing anything new. It's just
they're different.
They're not using the information as sort of to help strategize. It's actually the strategy.
But what if I asked? What if I asked Alex Anthopoulos? Not trying to be a smart aleck. Oh, wow. What if I ask Alex Anthopoulos? Alex, what are you doing in the minor leagues to teach your pitchers to go into the sixth or seventh inning? What is he going to say? And if I said, then if he says, well, we're not, and then I'm going to say, well, how are you teaching your players to extend in the major leagues if they can't do it in the minor leagues? What is he going to say? We know what he's going to say. He's not going to have an answer. But you know what? That's not an Alex problem again. That's an industry problem, and that's kind of what we're talking about here. Thanks, Moneyball. Scouts aren't the bravest way to build a winning team. All right, we're going to take a break. We're at Merce here in Atlanta getting ready for Braves and the Rockies. Back with more as we continue here on The Bill Shanks Show.
Braves, Bulldogs, Falcons, Yellow Jackets, Hawks, Eagles. From the heart of Georgia, it's the Bill Shanks Show.
Hour number four of our broadcast. Welcome back. I'm Bill Shanks with Russ Brown. We are live on the radio here from Atlanta. Merce Restaurant here at the Com Galleria, where they've got burgers. We're going to get a burger before we leave to go to the game. We're not getting the deep-fried Twinkie. But if you want the deep-fried Twinkie, go at it. We tried it one time.
I should have laid off the cheese curds and saved room for the deep-fried Twinkie. I don't know if I could do both.
I don't think you could. It's a little much. They've got great burgers, though. I'm debating between the bourbon bacon burger, bacon cheddar, and our special bourbon sauce, or the comeback burger, pepper jack cheese, and our secret comeback sauce. So comeback sauce or bourbon sauce? I may need comeback sauce after the bourbon sauce. Russ may get the peanut butter burger stacked with crispy bacon and creamy peanut butter. And he's talking about the bourbon burger as well, so we'll see what happens. All right, we are here at Merce. We invite you to come and be part of the great environment here at Merce, great Braves stuff here, and it's it's a great environment. You can walk right to the stadium. If you need a place to park, you can park here for $5 for a Braves game. Come here to Merce. Eat here at Merce. They'll validate your parking for $5. You can't beat that here, and it's a 10-minute, maybe 12-minute walk to SunTrust Park. It's very easy to get to, so we invite you to come to Merce Restaurant. All right. Real quick, NFL draft tonight, rounds 2 and 3. What do you expect to happen if anything, for the Falcons who do not have a pick? Are they going to trade in the third round and get one? What do you think?
I think so. Who knows what they're looking at after last night, right? Obviously, all these mock drafts go right out the window. But if there's a defensive tackle in particular that they like somewhere in the third round, maybe middle of it, I think you could see them make a play to try to get back up in there and get them.
It's going to be fun to see. There's no doubt. It's going to be a real interesting night to see if they get in that third round. And if not, there's going to be a lot of activity tomorrow, obviously, with the picks they have in rounds 4 through 7. We'll see where the Georgia players go. We'll see if any of the Georgia Tech players, I think Andre Ainsamore is a possibility for drafting tomorrow, at least that's what we were able to read a little bit earlier on in Twitter. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in Georgia Tech's spring game tonight at Bobby Dodd. I'm going to leave here and drop Russ by and let him take an Uber back to SunTrust Park. Anyway, Braves and Rockies tonight. Max, what's old Maxie going to do? What do you think? Another good one?
Seeing as it's not a scrimmage and it's a real game, Bill, I think, you know what, he's starting to garner some national attention. I think Braves country is really starting to latch on to this kid. I think he could have a big night tonight. I really do. Friday night, home start, wearing the red jerseys, packed house. I think we'll see something special.
It's Ronald Acuna bobblehead, so you know it's going to be crazy tonight, and it should be a lot of fun. By the way, tonight's lineup, Brett Butler in center, Rafael Ramirez in short, Claudel Washington in right, Dale Murphy in center, Bob Horner at third, Chris Chambliss at first, Glenn Hubbard at second, Bruce Benedict the catcher, and on the mound tonight, forget about Max Fried. How about 80-year-old Phil Niekro? He'll be making his 18th start of the year. He's already got 10 complete games.
Just 10.
Yeah, no, that's the lineup from posted here at MERS from April 4th, 1983. Hey, look, you know what? I think Max can keep on doing it. I think he's a stud pitcher. I think he's got the best curveball in the National League, and he's got great stuff, so let's hope he'll continue it. And I think it'll be rocking tonight with everybody wanting to get a bobblehead and enjoying the red out and having fun here. All right, we've got Braves baseball coming up. We're back on Monday. We'll look back on the entire NFL draft to see what happened and hopefully have more good vibes about what the Falcons were able to accomplish. Pick the click tonight. Russ Brown, who you taking?
I'm going to go with shortstop Johan Camargo.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, there's a little thing about the lineup there. All right. Can't wait to see that. I'll take Max Fried. Let's just hope they'll win a good weekend series from Colorado. From Murphs, for Russ Brown, I'm Bill Shanks. We'll talk to you again on Monday here on The Bill Shanks Show.